So we've reached a magical moment. I think maybe even got past it. We're going to have Keith Bolander coming up in just a moment.
And to start singing with me a few years ago, because his Spanish is much better than mine. Spent 9 years in Nicaragua. And so we're singing a song. I actually learned this. I was singing at children's camp 32 years ago. And the kid said, oh, you got to learn this song from us. We learned it from our counselor who came up here from Cuba. And this very shy young man was introduced to me. I said, gee, I don't know Spanish. But when I heard him sing the song, I got to try and learn it. It's one of my favorite songs in the entire world now. I've sung it in 35 countries of this world. And I hope you join in on the refrain.
Yo soy un hombre sincero, de donde crecen las palmas. Yo soy un hombre sincero, de donde crecen las palmas. Y antes de morir me quiero echar mis versos del alma. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera.
Oh, some people are singing beautifully, but others maybe. Repeat just one word, Guantanamera.
Well, that's obviously it was Pete Seeger, and he was talking more than we thought we had realized at the beginning. He was a great figure and loved Cuba, by the way. Keith Bolander is going to be speaking Wednesday, 11 March, at 6:30 p.m. Samara, 33 Prince Arthur Avenue. That's near Bedford and St. George Subway. And it's a free event, but you got to get there early. And there's a number, 416-590-0630. Also speaking, and the title is The Great Thaw, Cuba-American Relations, Moving Towards Normalization, and the Cuban consul, General Mr. Javier Ruiz, is also going to be there. And Keith Bolander is right here with us. How are you doing, Keith?
Very well, Phil.
It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me back. Thank you.
So this occasion, is this sort of an indication of things moving on a little bit? I wonder, a year ago, maybe you wouldn't have been invited for this program. What's the interest going here now? What do they expect to hear from you?
Yeah, that would have been impossible because there would have been a no announcement. I'm going to be speaking on the new move towards a normal relationship between Cuba and the United States based on the announcement of President Obama and the Cuban president, Raul Castro, on December. Both sides looking towards moving towards a more normal relationship. There's been two series of meetings, the first one in Havana, the last one just a couple weeks ago in Washington, for the two sides to start negotiating the first step of this normalization process. And that's opening an embassy in Havana and in Washington. Both sides have intersections, so they're going to establish full embassies.
Now, one of the things the Americans immediately noted, I saw, was that they said, you know, actually, we have an American interest group there, and it is big. For all, even despite the fact it was not normal relations, there was an American interest section with a lot of people in it, right?
It's a huge building right on the Malecon. I don't know how many floors, but hundreds of employees in it. But it's just the status difference. The intersection doesn't have the capacity to offer full embassy status.
But they had personnel. I mean, who was that exactly?
Well, the Cubans say they were all spies, and the
well, I'll vote for that.
And the Cuban intersection
in
Washington.
I don't have any evidence, but I would believe it.
And the Americans said all the members in the Cuban intersection in Washington were spies. So in Havana, a lot of the work of the intersection personnel was dealing with Cubans who wanted to immigrate into the United States. That was probably the vast majority.
Of course, there is a big population. I mean, they can't undo it. There's so many Cuban Americans. They're going back for, 1900 before.
Well, absolutely.
Jose Marti lived in the United States.
Yeah, and since the revolution, there has been a proportion
and
of
his
Cuban.
And has always traveled back and forth.
Yeah, and I think that's most of the work that the intersection does, is besides stirring up the dissidents in Cuba.
Yeah. When you are you confident it's going to unfold? Is there any possible bumps in the road? Or?
Yeah, there's a huge obstacle right now between Cuba and the United States in the process of establishing the first step, which is putting embassies in, and the Cubans are insisting that they be removed from the State Department list of states that sponsor terrorism. And the Cubans have been on it since the early 80s, and they find it completely hypocritical, because the Cubans' position is they've been the country that has suffered from hundreds of acts of terrorism originated by Cuban-American organizations in Florida. But meanwhile, Cuba is on the State Department's list of states that sponsor terrorism, which is a completely arbitrary designation from the United States. So the Cuban side has said, we will not proceed with normalization until we're removed. That may actually happen this month. President Obama has indicated strongly that he's looking into it. And the Cuban position is, well, how can you normalize relations with us if you still consider us a state that sponsors terrorism, which they don't. So that is an obstacle that I think has to be resolved in the very new future, if not this month, before the next step can take place.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, Keith Bollinger is the author of two great books, Cuba Under Siege, American Policy, the Revolution and Its People, and also Voices from the Other Side, an Oral History of Terrorism Against Cuba. So if you were going to settle this matter between the states, you have to call Keith as your first witness. There is a kind of little game the Americans like to play. They say, well, the president can do so much, but then he needs Congress, right? And so it's true, he can say, we're going to take you off the list, but somehow or another this will end up being argued amongst the American congressmen, right?
In this case, no. The president does have the authority to authorize the State Department to remove Cuba from the list. Once the State Department reports that Cuba has not been involved in any terrorist activities, which they have not. So in that case, the president can unilaterally remove Cuba from the list. And there's other timing pressure, because the Americans want to have the embassies actually in place by April, in time for the American summit in Panama. So the Americans are putting pressure on the Cubans to fast track the normalization, meaning putting embassies in, and the Cubans are saying, no, you remove us from the list first, and then we'll move forward.
By the way, that's a very important meeting. When normalization first would broach, we heard about it from Obama and all. There were people who said that the U.S. was the one that was being isolated more and more. And they were saying that at this Panama meeting, there was going to be very strong language. I think there was even a suggestion that maybe they would invite the U.S. not to attend if they keep this up about Cuba.
Yeah, very much so. There was a number of countries that said, if Cuba is not there, we're not going to be there. And that's the first time that's happened. So you're absolutely right. The only country that's isolated in regards to Cuba is the United States. Latin America fully supports Cuba's participation in this meeting and supports the normalization process. So there's actually a fair bit of pressure on the Americans to move forward on this.
Yeah, I know this is going to be – there's additional pressures now. I guess this is a place to mention it. Today, the United States government says it regards Venezuela as a threat to American national security.
I hadn't heard that, but that's not surprising. Yeah, they've tried to treat
Venezuela. By the way, you don't necessarily have to believe it, because I got it from an American newspaper, so that – you know, so they tend to go for hyperbole before they go for facts. Yes, apparently the U.S. said that the recent arrest of Venezuelans who were minding their own business but accused of being involved in a coup attempt against the government had the decision by Venezuela to downsize the U.S. Embassy caused Obama to put now they've issued a list of people who cannot enter the United States, seven government ministers.
That's interesting because the Venezuelans just in the last week or so announced a list of American politicians.
Cheney.
As well as a couple Cuban-American politicians, Robert Menendez, Marco Rubio. And so maybe this is a political tit for tat.
Sounds like, a little bit of back and forth, which unfortunately does happen, to save face, stupid policies are followed.
The way,
which is the story of the Cuban relationship.
Yeah, and the way the Americans have treated Venezuela since Hugo Chavez, and including the fact that it's fairly well documented that the Americans were involved in the coup against Chavez.
Indeed, and we were saying earlier today that the governments of South America almost unanimously have supported the Venezuelan government in its response to this coup attempt, and there are even investigators from South America, the ALBA countries, have sent who are writing basically or reports which say yes, there is evidence.
And that's changed the dynamics too, because you wouldn't get that response from Latin America, 10, 15, 20 years
Not
ago.
At all.
It's a much more solid front in Latin America, regardless, right wing, center left, in relation the new relationship towards the United States. And Cuba has such an important part to play in that new relationship.
And also the Caribbean states. I mean, it is wall to wall. I mean, you would think that there might be a serious meeting in Washington and say, let's just shred this whole stupid policy. And the Monroe Doctrine period is kaput.
It is as far as the Latin American countries are concerned.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you can get a Platt Amendment through the Congress.
Let's hope not.
We're talking to Keith Bolander, and Keith is speaking on the 11th, and that's Wednesday the 11th at 6:30, Samara, 33 Prince Arthur Avenue. What's Samara? Is that a building?
It's the place. It's the actual place. It's being sponsored by the Canadian International Council.
So you have a meeting
Council
in Samara.
Yeah, it sounds quite exotic.
That's a novel. But anyway, 33 Prince Arthur Avenue, Bedford Road, St. George. And you can call 416-590-0630. It's the first come, first serve for the seats. And this title is The Great Thaw, Cuba-American Relations. Also on the program is the Cuban Consul General, Mr. Ruiz. Keith, you've made a trip to Cuba since we saw you last. How does it feel down here?
There's still tremendous optimism and expectation, and the optimism is great. The expectation maybe need to be tempered a little bit because people still think this is going to be a process that's going to happen relatively soon, and it's not. I mean, the first stage has already hit some roadblocks. So this is not East Germany. No, this will take, in my opinion, this will take a long time because Congress is involved in regards to the embargo and the travel restrictions. The complete elimination of those two elements will have to come from Congress, and I don't see that happening at least until the next presidential elections.
Yeah, and there are some sensitive issues. I saw the Cuban consul at a meeting at Betsatun, wonderful institution, by the way. I'd love to say Betsatun, and he said, we don't have any bases inside the United States. The United States does have a base inside Cuba. We just sang, had the song here a while ago, Pete Seeger, Guantanamera, which is about which is same place as Guantanamo. That saying those things is really saying to the Americans, we're not just going to play along here. We're not doing cartwheels at a chance to have relations, right?
This is something that is really important because the Cubans have their position and they will maintain it. There was a year and a half secret negotiations going on before the announcement was made in December. So they must have touched on these things, but Guantanamo Bay is definitely a topic that the Cubans will want to resolve.
You know, if you want to develop the country, that is a wonderful port, right?
It's incredible.
Their economy would be tremendously boosted if they regained sovereignty over that port.
It's hugely important. It's the largest port in Cuba. It connects to the south side of Cuba and the Caribbean below that. But it's going to be really difficult to negotiate the return of that, because the Americans have no interest at this point to return that base.
It's all empire all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. But that's one. I mean, there's other topics like the Cuban Adjustment Act, where Cubans who come into the United States get all sorts of benefits. The Cubans have brought that up. They complain because it's simply an inducement for Cubans to get into rafts and risk their lives coming to the United States.
Yes.
They want that ended.
That was true. It was always the issue was visas, right? The U.S. would not give an ordinary Cuban a visa, so he had to get on his raft and start rowing.
Strictly political. You're absolutely right. The Americans would make it really tough to get a visa. So then the Cubans would say, well, I'm getting on a raft. And when there was unfortunate loss of lives, the Americans would use it for political propaganda purposes.
No freedom
against
in
Cuba.
No freedom to get a visa from the United States.
Yeah, that part was never told.
And if you're a Haitian, you go ahead and drown.
Or they'll ship you back to Haiti, where the Cubans, if they get into the United States, come on in, you're more than welcome, here's all these benefits. And so the rest of Latin America has problems with that.
No trouble figuring that out. Actually, Canadians, too, understand a little bit. The border exercise, about once a week, there's a letter in the Toronto Star by somebody who said, I went to the border and a man with a gun told me I couldn't get in to go to Disneyland because he wasn't sure I'd come back.
He wasn't Cuban then.
Yeah. And, so Canadians have a sense of that. I mean, they're a little harder to fool. The only public that is apparently kept in the dark is the American population.
When it comes to Cuba, more than not.
They fear our freedoms.
Yeah. That's what they... So it'll be an interesting process to see what happens over the next months and not years
Now, happens. Where did you go in Cuba, by the way? Did you just Havana or Santiago? You travel around?
Yeah. Havana, yeah. We're working on my next project.
I've seen U.S. always starts this thing sort of with little cultural things. I noticed they had Conan O'Brien went down and did a show, and then he appeared on another show to explain that he wasn't taking sides, and he wasn't looking for trouble, and he's just minding his own business, and he just,
I saw it. I don't know if you were able to see it.
What did you think of it?
It was actually pretty good, because he connected with the people. He left politics out of it. He went to a dance lesson. He went to the cigar factory. He connected with the people, and this is the key, I think. You let Americans come down and see for themselves the Cuban people, what's actually happening down there. It's a completely different attitude you have. I was impressed with them.
Think of that. Those Americans who did not exercise their right to travel, who accepted it when the American government said, you cannot go to that country, when they their own freedom. They're being told, we will that limit your freedom.
And that was political, too, because the hard-right Cuban-American congressman, absolutely want to maintain the travel restrictions, because they know if an average American goes down to Cuba, he'll find out for himself the good, the bad, and the indifferent, and he'll make up his own mind instead of having, for the last 50 years, the message totally controlled, anti-Cuban message totally controlled by the politicians.
That, of course, we start off today the terrible reporting we're getting from the Iraq-Kurdish area problem, and then also the fact that we had this case in Ottawa where the man went into Parliament, where powerful people tell us we can't know things. We speak of freedom, and we say, look at the poor Cubans. But there's no one here sharing with us the information we need if we're going to function as free people.
Knowledge is such a powerful tool, and if you withhold that knowledge, which the American media and the politicians have done regarding Cuba, it's no surprise the average American has such a negative opinion about Cuba, because they've never been there, and they've never been allowed to go there and see for themselves.
Yeah. That really has been a major thing. I remember the son of a American writer, Jessica Mitford. Her son is Phil would appreciate it, a piano tuner. And he took a bunch of grand pianos to Cuba. And then he came back and he said he was going to turn himself in for the reward because he wanted Americans to know how they're being done out of their rights, to travel and to see for themselves.
That is so important, and that is the
chip off
key.
The old block, by the way.
If you, I think of all the elements of this new normalization process, it's President Obama's talking about making it easier for Americans to go to Cuba. They still have to go through the licenses, but they can go through a general license where they don't have to apply specifically. So it's a lot easier for them to go, see for themselves, interact with the Cuban people. And a lot of people have said, well, if the Americans come in, that's going to change Cuba. No, if the Americans come in, my opinion is it's going to change the United States.
I absolutely agree with that. I think it would also – a lot of the people in Florida will shift their votes, actually. And I don't mean the Cuban.
The
American.
You look at the dynamics in Florida, the majority of Cuban Americans are voting for normalization because they know what's happening in Cuba.
And they're voting to arrest Menendez, aren't they?
He's up for charges now, isn't he?
It shows you, by the way, American politics, you want to be careful. You're going to find yourself on the wrong side. Somebody will be talking to you about your tax returns, and you say, gee, I shouldn't have given that speech, should I?
Well, and I just wrote an article about people speculate why Obama made the announcement when he did, and my article speculated that possibly part of it could have been because the Democrats lost the Senate. And when they lost the Senate, they lost Robert Menendez as being chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, a powerful voice for the maintenance of the embargo against Cuba within his own party. So when Menendez lost his party influence, then Obama may have said, okay, well, all I have to deal with is now Republican opposition. I've been dealing with that for years.
Yeah.
I don't have to deal with Menendez and his powerful voice within my own party.
That's I had not heard that. You say you wrote about this. Where did you write about it? Where can I find that?
Progresso Weekly.
Progresso.
Progresso Weekly. It's a blog out of Miami, written organized by a Cuban American, but it's more pro the normalization.
Good.
And
very
it was
good.
Last week.
We're talking to Keith Bullender, and he is speaking. The title of the talk will be The Great Thaw, Cuba-American Relations Moving Towards Normalization. Also speaking will be the Cuban Consul General, Mr. Ruiz. That's Wednesday, March 11 at 6:30 p.m. Speaking of the sort of the inability of the media to catch up with this story, the Toronto Star had an odd one. I want to get your comment because everybody at CIUT was laughing. Now that the relations are warming, Cubans are rediscovering baseball. Young men are now taking up baseball again.
Yeah, and I saw
could
that.
Could you help us out?
I can't.
Who
help
the heck
you
is
that
editing
one.
That paper?
I saw that and I just couldn't believe it. The Cubans in baseball are like Canadians in hockey. We don't have to rediscover hockey. It was incredible, but it's funny. Of baseball, there was some talk about next spring, there may be some major league teams operating their spring training in Havana.
Uh-huh.
So is that the next step towards
talking.
Reestablishment of the Havana
and
Sugar Kings?
Inviting young 18-year-old Cubans who might want to try out.
If the Blue Jays went down to Havana and held their spring training there instead of Dunedin.
Yeah. Well, that would
be good.
And the Jays would be the logical team. They have less ideological baggage to go down there and do that. But by the way, Cuba, baseball is a rich man's sport. Did you read that? I mean, that was the first sentence.
I didn't get that. Maybe I did. It didn't sink in. Well, that's stunning. In its misrepresentation of the reality, because you see kids with sticks and rocks on the street playing baseball, like we used to play hockey on the street. You see that in Cuba everywhere.
Yeah, and by the way, isn't that – sure, you just put your finger on it. I mean, the Canadian kids play with whatever they can find, right? The guy said, they use old boxes for bases and they use sticks for bats. And I said, well, that's me. You're making me self-conscious. But I mean, what? I'm sorry, Phil. You're poor. I didn't know.
That,
but I know now.
I can't imagine who they.
I guess I'm a Cuban.
Who they spoke to in Cuba to get that perspective? It's stunning.
Well, how's it in the last minutes here? And again, we're talking to Keith Bullender. He's going to be at Wednesday, 11 March at 6:30 p.m. at 33 Prince Arthur Avenue. How is the media there dealing with that? How is this sort of the editorial writing or the opinion pieces? What are they telling Cubans to look for or expect in this period?
There's been obviously a tremendous amount of coverage on it, and the media that I've seen has been indicating that this is a tremendously positive step for Cuba and the United States, but it will be a long process. And the second round of negotiations that took place in Washington a couple weeks ago, there was a considerable amount of Cuban media that went to cover this. So they actually had the chance to interact with their American counterparts, and it was quite interesting from what I understand, the perceptions from both sides. So the Cuban media is pretty straightforward in this situation where they'll keep the Cuban public informed. And they'll let them know it is not going to happen overnight. It's going to take a long process.
And the last thing, Raul and others have made clear, there is not going to be a change in this system. If there's the idea that the Americans will only make relations with somebody who changes their system to match the...
Yeah, that's the key to it all. I mean, for sure,
their model.
Cuba is going to change. I mean, the first generation revolutionaries are going to not be with us in a few years. So Cuba is going to have a 21st century socialism. America will have an influence as much as Canada and Europe has had. How it will change, what will happen is anyone's guess. Yeah. But Raul and I think the majority of the people still support their system. They just want to improve it.
Well, if they stay with it, and Venezuelans, maybe, you see, we could have a 21st century socialism.
That'd be nice.
We would have better baseball players, that's for sure. Keith Bolander, who, by the way, two great books, and you need these books. The background: Cuba Under Siege, American Policy, The Revolution and Its People, and the book Voices from the Other Side: An Oral History of Terrorism Against Cuba. He's speaking Wednesday, 11 March at 6:30 p.m., 33 Prince Arthur Avenue. And Keith Bolander, hey, it's been great seeing you. And this is the Taylor Report, CIT 89.5 FM.